Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Governor Mike Dunleavy agreed yesterday to restore funding for early education in Alaska, but educators in Juneau say that even with funding back in place, services this year could be affected. KTOO's Zoe Gruskin has more.
In June, Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed nearly $9 million for Head Start and early learning programs from the state operating budget. The Central Council of the Thlinket and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, which operates 15 Head Start classrooms around Southeast, planned to respond to those cuts by closing 3 classrooms and discontinuing bus services. Thlinket and Haida Head Start Director Amber Fromhers says the funding reversal is good news, but it's not yet certain if all services will be restored.
Plans have been put in place that it's hard to walk back from because this was such a disruption.
Fromhers says she and her staff are working to open all classrooms in September, but it'll be a scramble. Reinstating bus services will be a particular challenge, she says, because they've already gotten out of their contracts. Juneau School District had hoped to add preschool classrooms this year, but with the start of the school year just around the corner, Superintendent Bridget Weiss says that's off the table for now.
It's very disruptive to the system to try to do that and find a teacher and move forward right now with expanding a classroom.
But if it's too late to add an entire preschool classroom, Weiss says the restored state funding gives the district more room to expand services in other ways. That could include more full-day and after-school preschool programs. Weiss says those changes could happen this school year. The first day of preschool at Juneau schools is August 27th. Thlinket and Haida Head Start classrooms will open in early September. In Juneau, I'm Zoe Gruskin.
A decision by the Trump administration over exempting the Tongass National Forest from the roadless rule is expected soon. That's according to Senator Lisa Murkowski, who said yesterday that rolling back restrictions to road building is crucial for Southeast Alaska's economy.
I very early on went to the Trump administration and said, as we look to the state of Alaska and the application of the roadless rule, we have to be able to have a plan that is specific to us.
The head of the U.S. Forest Service was directed by the Secretary of Agriculture last summer to initiate an Alaska-specific rule for the Tongass. During a 90-day period last fall, the Forest Service received 144,000 comments, the majority expressing opposition to rolling back protections. 90% of the comments were form letters or petitions. Even so, according to the Forest Service's summary, only a small minority supported a full exemption from the roadless rule for Alaska, which is what Senator Murkowski is advocating.
I think a complete exemption from the roadless is what is best suited for Alaska. We're encouraging the Secretary of Agriculture, as he is moving forward with these decisions, to include a full exemption as one of the preferred alternatives. At this moment in time, we're still waiting. In fairness, I thought we would already have it by mid-August.
The next step is the release of a draft environmental impact statement by summer's end. That could include a full exemption or some hybrid rule for the Tongass. Another public comment period would be held before a final report is released in 2020. Conservationists are concerned that exempting the Tongass from the roadless rule would open up large tracts to commercial old-growth logging. One of the 5 candidates running for Juneau's school board in October's municipal election has withdrawn from the race. Amanda Ryder notified the city clerk's office today that she's dropping out. Reached by phone, Ryder said that with 5 candidates, it felt like a crowded field. But she said she thought her experience as a senior fiscal analyst for the Legislative Finance Division could be helpful in dealing with state education funding.
I actually plan to approach the board anyway and just offer my services if they need any assistance and see what I can do.
That leaves 4 candidates vying for 2 seats on the board. Each of the 7 seats has a 3-year term. The other candidates are Bonnie Jensen, Emil Mackey, Dee Dee Sorensen, and Martin Stepton Sr. Candidates have until 4:30 p.m. Friday to notify the clerk's office if they have changed their minds. Otherwise, their names will still appear on the October 1st ballot. This year's Golden North Salmon Derby gets underway on Friday. Anglers who land the heavier king salmon in Juneau waters usually take home the biggest prizes. But derby organizers rely on catches of the more plentiful coho salmon to raise money for their scholarship fund. Daniel Teske is a sport fish biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, who also spends a lot of time on his own, dipping some lines in the water. During Morning Edition this morning, he told KTOO's Matt Miller that he tried catching some cohos on the backside of Douglas Island last weekend.
Didn't have very much luck. It seems to be pretty slow fishing around here. I'm not sure if it's the lack of rainfall and fresh water pouring out of the streams or not. I don't know if they're just not coming in. But the outside fisheries seem to be doing fairly well. So hopefully we'll get some rain later this week and draw some of those fish to the inside waters here. Still real early in terms of coho returning to the inside water. The coho are present in the marine waters typically in highest numbers in early September, and so we'll have a much better idea of run strength once we get into the month of September. But right now it's just a little bit early, but it, in my opinion, it seems a little bit slow fishing.
And for those people who are going out this weekend, what do you suggest as far as what they use, how deep they go?
Yeah, I've always had really good luck fishing coho is pretty shallow, like in the 20 to 40 foot range. And I like to use a green flasher and a green hoochie or anything sort of bright, and bright green, bright orange, bright pink seem to work really well.
Any particular spots that are really good for staking out that are kind of within the Derby boundaries?
Yeah, I think probably the best catch rates are going to come from the False Retreat cordwood area. And so that's where you see a lot of the effort taking place, and it seems to be the best spot to pick up coho. But the backside of Douglas can be really good, and so can North Pass and North Shelter Island. Those are all pretty good spots to try.
Are you going to try yourself?
I am. I'm going to fish on the south end here. My boat's in the Douglas Harbor, so I'll probably try down by DuPont and Salisbury, and then maybe sneak around the backside of Douglas this weekend if the weather is not too nasty, and we'll see how it goes.
Oh wow, boy, Dan, you're kind of getting kind of specific as far as where you're going there. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, no secrets here. I like to tell everybody what's happening. So
okay, Daniel Teske, good luck.
All right, thanks, Matt.
That was sportfish biologist Daniel Teske talking with Matt Miller this morning. That reference he made to potentially nasty weather this weekend, the National Weather Service has issued an alert for strong winds in southeast Alaska, including potentially gale force winds in Lynn Canal on Saturday. For the second year running, a Southeast King Salmon Derby has been canceled due to conservation concerns. Organizers in the host city Wrangell had hoped to entice anglers with a coho derby instead, but things are getting off to a slow start. Wrangell's coho salmon derby got underway August 10th. 3 days later, only one guy had entered any fish, and neither weighed more than 6 pounds. Wrangell Chamber of Commerce only sold 50 tickets so far. They hope for even more by Labor Day when the derby ends. Chamber usually sells hundreds. A wake from the Alaska State Ferry Columbia caused a small skiff to capsize in Wrangell Narrows near Petersburg at about 7:30 p.m. Sunday. A nearby boat rescued 3 people in the skiff before the ferry's lifeboat reached the scene. KFSK's Ari Schneider reports.
No injuries have been reported to the state, and the water was apparently shallow enough to stand in. Ginger Pellerito filmed part of the incident from Island Point on Kupernoff Island. She told KSTK's June Leffler that she started filming when the Columbia made the unusual move of stopping in the middle of the Narrows.
All of a sudden, we saw people scrambling on the top, throwing life jackets in the little lifeboat. And then they were getting in and starting to descend the lifeboat. And so then we knew something was going on.
The ferry was sailing north toward Petersburg, and the event occurred about 10 miles south of town in a particularly narrow part of the channel. It's also a busy stretch of water due in part to several nearby lodges that rent out fishing boats. According to U.S. Coast Guard spokesperson Scott McCann, the boat involved was operated by Rocky Point Resort on Mitkoff Island. Rocky Point Resort declined to comment for this story. Alaska Department of Transportation spokesperson Ora Landau says these events are uncommon. She says crew on the ferry witnessed the incident while on routine watch duty.
The Marine Highway System has crew on watch at all times while underway to keep a proper lookout and have even more diligence in a narrow channel like the Wrangell Narrows. So crew members saw it happen and immediately reported it to the bridge.
Landau says the Columbia launched a lifeboat and reported the incident to the U.S. Coast Guard. She says AMHS is continuing to work with the Coast Guard to investigate the incident. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Ari Snyder.
The short film Who We Are was released in June. It's a reflection on the coastal erosion affecting Alaska Native villages and shows how art and culture connects these communities to the land. The director of the piece says her reliance on Alaska Native actors and symbols is unique for the world of cinema. Anchorage-based cinematographer Alexis Sully wrote and directed the project with the idea of honoring her own Alaska Native family and culture. She decides to reach out to Tristan Ognarok Morgan, a contemporary artist who shares Sully's Inupiaq ancestry.
I had been familiar with Tristan's work and was really inspired by a lot of what she draws. And I thought, man, it'd be really cool to collaborate with another artist and someone that is within the same indigenous nation as I am and has a lot of similar perspectives.
Morgan is the protagonist of Who We Are. The two-minute film opens with her reflecting on the past as she stares out into the Bering Sea.
I can stand on this shoreline and think of a time when our villages weren't disappearing, when the land wasn't being taken by the sea.
Every element of the film, from the actors to the musical score, was sourced from indigenous talent. That was a conscious decision by Sully, and one that included behind-the-scenes work as well.
And that was really important to have all indigenous crew, because that never happens. And it's something I'm working more towards and wanting to embrace more indigenous stories with indigenous crew.
The cast and crew decided to travel outside of Anchorage to film, and the majority of the short was shot in Nome and Shishmaref. Both locations were chosen because of their personal connection to Sully's past.
My great-grandma, you know, that's where my family comes from, is Shishmaref. And then she migrated to... her family migrated to Brevik Mission and then to Nome, where my grandma spent most of her time growing up.
Who We Are was submitted to the National She Directed Film Contest. The contest will award one winner $10,000 and the chance to win a professional mentorship, which is determined by public voting online. Sully says she's confident that her community will show their support for her film. And finally, here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau Borough and Northern Admiralty Island. Tonight, chance of rain, lows around 50. In downtown Juneau, that's lows in the mid-50s. Thursday, chance of rain, highs around 70, light winds. For downtown Juneau, that's highs in the mid-60s. And the National Weather Service says it's continuing to monitor a strong low-pressure system that'll impact the northern and central inner channels this weekend. Southerly winds will increase over the northern inner channels Friday afternoon and evening as the low-pressure system approaches from the north. Winds could be as high as 25 knots Friday evening in Lynn Canal. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, August 14th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.